Welcome, and this is a big welcome to the fourth water symposium of the 2010-2011 cycle. So we got a lot to celebrate about the water symposium. This is the fourth of the 2010-2011, and we finishing up our fourth year. When we put this together, we didn't think it would last much more than 1 year, and we're in our fourth year. And we have many requests for more topics, more panelists, and more issues. And I think it says a lot with regard to Texas that water is a hot-button issue, and there's a lot we need to learn about it. So I'm really excited about tonight's panel. You know, some of the topics we've addressed in the past have been somewhat controversial. Some have been proactive. Tonight's a proactive one. We've talked about the rule of capture, the energy-water nexus, kids and water, science and water, a whole host of topics. So please go to the Schreiner website for the Water Symposium. Just go Texas Water Symposium on Google, and it'll pop right up the first one. This Water Symposium is only possible because of a partnership. And I think in terms of addressing water problems in Texas and beyond, partnerships are going to be the key to many of the solutions. And so this partnership is Schreiner University, Texas Tech University, the Hill Country Alliance, and Texas Public Radio. So give those partners all a big round of applause, because they've done a lot. Next, I'm supposed to introduce the new guy. And the new guy is Chris Distel, who's a professor at Schreiner University. And I'll turn the session over to Chris. Chris, thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. I want to really welcome you on behalf of Schreiner, for those of you who aren't here all that often. Some of you are here probably more than others. We'll leave it at others. It's really great to see you here, though, and it's really great to have the Water Symposium here at Schreiner. This year in particular, as we kick off our new Field Biology Signature Program, I want to bring your attention to a continued event that we have here with the Water Symposium this week. On Saturday morning, April 2nd, we'll be doing a watershed cleanup in Nichols Creek between here and Ingram. So if you'd like more information, please check out our website. It'd be great to have lots of participation in that event. It's my pleasure to be here with a distinguished panel of experts spearheaded by Mr. Andy Sansom. You can see a brief biography here in the program. I'll point out a couple of important points. Mr. Sansom's been around in the conservation field for quite a while and has had quite a big impact. He served as executive director of both Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and the Texas Nature Conservancy. He's received several prominent awards for his service to the field, which you can see listed there in your program. His conservation career began in 1969, so he's seen a few things change, a few things progress, hopefully mostly in a positive way. He's published eight popular periodicals, and he's authored four books. And now he's research professor of geography and executive director of the River Systems Institute at Texas State, which is renowned for its aquatic systems programming, really great facility. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Andy Sansom.
Thank you, Dr. Distel. Thank you very much. He has just shown you that even as a biology professor, he has the most important attribute of the politician, which is that he, with that introduction, he's able to make things sound better than they actually are, which always reminds me of a man who was trying to get insurance for his family, and he got to the part on the program where he had to say what had happened to his parents. And the problem was his father had been hanged, and so he was reluctant, but in order to make things sound better than they actually were, he wrote on the form that his father had died at the age of 69 while participating in a public ceremony when the platform collapsed. So I do appreciate that introduction. I appreciate being here at Shriner. My family has a long history with this institution, and it's really great to be here, particularly with you students. My main takeaway for you tonight is that Texas is going to have twice as many people in the year 2040. And yet already we have given permission for more water to be withdrawn from many of our rivers than is actually in them, such that if all the water rights we have granted would be exercised, some of the most important and beautiful rivers of our state would be dry today. And yet we have twice as many people that we're going to have to provide water for and all the other things that we enjoy here in Texas in the next 25 years or so. Now, when I say that to people, oftentimes they say, well, what could I do? I mean, based on a seemingly overwhelming challenge like that, what can I do? I'm just one person. Well, tonight we're going to hear from people that have made a difference. Tonight you're going to hear from some real heroes with respect to our rivers, and particularly in this part of the state, which, because many of our hill country counties are the fastest growing counties in the United States and some of the most beautiful, the resources are under extreme stress. And so if it weren't for people like the wonderful group that I'm going to introduce you to tonight, we would be in a whole lot worse shape. And I think we can also take, as you will find as we get through the program, some tremendous optimism and hope because of what they do for you each day. We're not going to take any questions because this program is being broadcast on public radio in San Antonio until after we finish the presentations. And then we will conduct a discussion in which we'll ask for any questions or comments that you may have from the audience. Our first guest is a colleague of mine whom I see several times a month, whom I have the privilege of seeing her work up close and personal. Diane Wasnich has been with the San Marcos River Foundation since its beginning. In fact, she is synonymous with the San Marcos River Foundation. She's been a volunteer, a board member, and now she's the program director. She is an essayist in a new volume of work, which I hope some of you have seen, called The Living Waters of Texas, which is a beautiful book that includes a number of photographs of the Hill Country Springs and other water resources of our state. Diane was born in Smithville, but she grew up, interestingly, near the same place I did, on the Texas coast in the little town of New Gulf. She began her undergraduate studies at Rice. She has a degree from the University of Houston, and she worked for several years in the Frank Church Wilderness of northern Idaho. So please welcome Diane Wasnich of the San Marcos River Foundation.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here in a college that I've never been to before, a university I've never seen, and your campus is so beautiful. We work a lot with students in San Marcos because we have a university there, and so I feel really comfortable talking to y'all. I talk to a lot of classes in San Marcos. Our organization, the San Marcos River Foundation, is truly a community effort to try to take care of our river. It's been around for, I think this is the beginning of our 27th year. That's hard to imagine. But it's been around for a long time, and it was formed not by me and not run by me for many, many of its early years. There were many community members involved, the Heritage Association, the Lions Club, the Chamber, all kinds of leaders in the community got together. They could see that there was a need for somebody to take care of the river. You know, rivers are often between the border lines, or they form the border lines of counties. And so it's kind of like the river is a no man's land, and there's nobody that wants to maybe take responsibility to make sure it's clean and handled properly and that there is law enforcement on it. So these community leaders decided they needed to have a group that actually protected the river. And they got together and they raised money for a small endowment fund, thinking that the interest income from the endowment fund would help fund projects that we needed to do, like river cleanups and so on. I don't think they foresaw interest rates being quite what they are right now, but they did get a lot of attention drawn to the issue. And the River Foundation in its early years was very slow growing and slow to really get involved because there was a great hesitancy to be involved in anything controversial. Well, now, as you know, anything that has to do with rivers and water is controversial inherently. And so after about 10 or 12 years, the River Foundation started really getting in there and working hard to clean up point sources of pollution, wastewater treatment plants, that sort of thing, because we could see real impacts to the water quality. About 10 years into the River Foundation's work, we also realized that there needed to be a volunteer group of river quality, water quality monitors. So we trained people with the Texas Stream Team, and which is a statewide water quality monitoring group. And the River Foundation paid for the test kits and the supplies. And that has really helped because now there's kind of a long record of the data of what the water quality is. So that way when you see something go awry, you have that background data. So you know that things are not right with the river. And maybe you can kind of figure out by testing at a whole bunch of different points along the river where things are going awry so you can kind of figure out what the problem is. And that has proved to be very useful. I would say water quality monitoring by volunteers is a wonderful way also to get eyes on the river so that if somebody sees a fish kill, they know that there's something going wrong and they need to call the authorities to figure out what to do about that. You know, there's special phone numbers run 24 hours a day for fish kills and pollution. There's a department at Texas Parks and Wildlife called Kills and Spills. So having people on all these different spots on the river regularly, once a week or once every 2 weeks, really helps. And that's one thing that has been a great investment for our organization, is paying for those test kits and supplies and getting people trained and getting them out there and enjoying the river. We also, in San Marcos, have a tremendous problem with invasive aquatic plants. Things that came from Sri Lanka, when a piece of that lands in our river with its constant temperatures year-round from the springs, it thinks it's died and gone to heaven. And it proliferates at such a rate that it's really frightening. And it wipes out a lot of the native aquatic plants that provide food for fish and wildlife, and even riparian edge, riverside edge plants. So the River Foundation volunteers, there's hundreds of them, we pick up literally tons of things like water hyacinth, alligator weed, hydrilla. Now, you have to have permits to do this, and often it's U.S. Fish and Wildlife staffers who are helping us because we have a lot of endangered species in our river, and they want to make sure that things are done carefully. So they're the ones that get the permits from the state Texas Parks and Wildlife Department to remove the invasive plants, and then we get out there as volunteers and do the manual labor and line up a dump truck and figure out who's going to compost it far, far, far away from the river and other ways to dispose of more dangerous plants. I don't know if that's an issue so much in Hill Country Streams, but I have heard from Tyson, who's going to speak to you next, that elephant ears have shown up in some of the rivers that he's associated with. So elephant ears are a big problem. Do not let them get started in your rivers here. So that's a really important thing that our community does with volunteers, because you could never pay anybody to do this. This is dirty work, and it would be very expensive. So it's good that we have volunteers that are willing to get in there, and a lot of them are students, not all of them. Some of my most reliable volunteers are the master naturalists that Texas AgriLife trains and retired people who have time on their hands and just love that satisfying feeling of plucking something up and hearing when it comes out of the soil going boink. That's just a feeling that weeders get from removing elephant ears that you can't get any other way. The River Foundation also is very involved, of course, in river cleanups, trash education. We have such a problem with trash, and it's a never-ending problem, so you just have to stay at it steadily over and over again. And this is where students in particular have been so wonderful. In San Marcos, we have them out on tributary creeks so that we can clean up these tributaries so that it doesn't get washed into the river. Our city has also started paying scuba divers to work once a week during the summer to get all the beer cans off the bottom of the river, because that's really hard for volunteers to do if they don't have scuba equipment. But trash cleanups are a major thing that we do. We also fund a lot of other things, special tests on the river, special tests in the Edwards Aquifer. We have some caves in San Marcos that actually you can go down and touch the aquifer. Not everybody wants to do this because it's really far down, but we do have some hydro labs and equipment down there to test water quality. The River Foundation is involved in many stakeholder processes to improve watershed, I guess you would call it watershed management. You know, how many parks have dog poop dispenser bags and instructions about how to dispose of that sort of thing. Much more than that, feral hog control, because feral hogs can have a huge impact on water quality. Teaching people what to do in their yards about not using too much fertilizer. Those kind of things. Watershed management. We're involved in stakeholder processes and trying to educate people and bringing landowners together so that they can all learn and decide what measures should be taken voluntary to clean up their watershed. And then, of course, we're involved in, most people know the River Foundation for being involved in water rights issues, because we applied for a water right about 10 years ago to leave water in the river, which we thought was a brilliant idea. And after litigating for 10 years back and forth on that, that has concluded. But we are now, and we did not get the water right, but we are now involved in a Bay Basin stakeholder process for the Guadalupe Basin, trying to determine how much flow rivers should have, how much water should bays and estuaries have in the future. And we're also involved in a stakeholder process on the Edwards Aquifer, trying to make sure that our Comal and San Marcos Springs actually will flow during drought. So there's a lot of different things that our community has come together to try to do, to try to protect that beautiful San Marcos River that we all love so much. And thank you for inviting us here. I'm looking forward to hearing what our other gentlemen are doing on their rivers.
Thank you, Diane. You know, once again, we're focusing tonight on things that everyone can do. I can tell you that as a graduate student at Texas State University, I have been involved in a project in one of our streams in Hays County, in which it was determined that the largest source of E. coli bacteria in the stream was pet waste. And that we're finding that's more and more true in streams, particularly in urban areas across the state. So that's, again, one thing that each of us can do is to pick up after our pets. Our next guest is Tyson Broad. Tyson is the co-founder of the South Llano Watershed Alliance. He's authored Land of the Living Waters, A Characterization of the South Llano River, and The Unknown River of Texas, which is a characterization of the James River, which I hope many of you have visited. He, like Diane, is associated with the Texas Living Waters Project. He has worked for that effort for the last 6 years. It's a joint effort of the National Wildlife Federation, the Environmental Defense, and the Lone Star Chapter of the Sierra Club. Tyson has a B.S. in Geography from Texas A&M, an M.S. in Geography and Natural Resources Management from Oregon State, and he has served as a Water Use Project Specialist for the U.S. Geological Survey in Portland. He lives near Pontotoc, which is a place that he relates all the way back to his ancestors. And so we're very glad tonight to have Tyson Broad with us.
For the record, Pontotoc is between Llano and Brady. On behalf of the South Llano Watershed Alliance, we really appreciate all the sponsors of this event that are giving us a chance tonight to tell you all about our organization and our efforts. The topic of the meeting tonight is community, or how communities are taking care of their water resources. And really the story of the South Llano Watershed Alliance is not only the community, but the landowners and interested stakeholders taking care of a water resource that is critical to the region. Now, why is the South Llano critical? Well, pull out your mental maps for a minute and come westward on Interstate 10 up through Kerrville, where we are tonight. Go about another hour to the west to Junction. Junction is where the South Llano and the North Llano come together to form the Llano River, which flows on into the Highland Lakes. Tonight we're interested in talking about the South Llano, so turn left at Junction, head up towards Rock Springs, go by some old cabins that were built in the 1930s along the South Llano, and about 25 miles up the way, you start coming to the cliffs that make up the edge of the Edwards Plateau. And right around the town of Telegraph are three springs that come out of the base of those cliffs: Tanner Springs, Big Paint Springs, and 700 Springs. And these are the headwaters of the South Llano River. And these are the springs that make the South Llano so important. Why? Because they haven't gone dry in recorded history. So even in the 1950s drought, there was still water running down the South Llano River at Junction. Consequently, that creates a very healthy ecosystem that supports, for example, the state fish of Texas, the Guadalupe bass. I'll talk more about that in a minute. It provides great recreational opportunities. Several of those cabins were built in the 30s because prior to the creation of the Highland Lakes, for example, there wasn't any place to go cool off in the summer. And even today, it's still a very well-used and hopefully respected canoeing trip. And one of the best things about the South Llano, not only does it flow, but it also flows north, so you always have those nice Texas south winds behind you when you're paddling. It is a water supply for the cities of Junction and Llano, and it's also a water supply for Austin, even though they may not know it. But during the 2006 drought, for example, 75% of the water that went into the Highland Lakes was coming down the Llano. So, sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? And so people always ask me, well, why do you need an alliance? Well, this isn't our father's Texas anymore. If you look at a legislative distribution map for the state of Texas and count the number of legislators serving those counties west of Interstate 35 and compare them to the number of legislators serving Harris County, there are more legislators in Harris County. We are becoming a much more urban state. And so if you look at a lot of the resource conflicts that have happened in this state recently, a lot of them have developed when these rural communities have pressures placed on their water resources. And those rural communities lack the time to respond, they don't have adequate data, and they don't have a local and unified voice. So at the latter part of 2008, a lot of the locals in the South Llano area, Kimball County, which is Junction, Mason County, and Edwards County, Rock Springs, came together to form the South Llano Watershed Alliance. And we're the new kid. We created in 2008. And our mission statement is, I'm still very proud of this mission statement. It really hits what we're trying to do. It's an organization of landowners and interested stakeholders whose mission is to preserve and enhance South Llano River and adjoining watersheds by encouraging land and water stewardship through collaboration, education, and community participation. And because we identified land stewardship and water stewardship as both very necessary components in maintaining the flows of the springs and the river, we approach this from a watershed scale. Now, oftentimes I get asked, well, what's a watershed? Well, the most simple definition is it's basically an area of land where water flows across, through, or under on its way to a stream, a river, a lake, or other body of water. We're all in a watershed. Tonight we're in the Guadalupe River watershed. So let me talk about collaboration. Diane touched on that a little bit earlier and how important it is. Kimball County is less than 5,000 people. So we don't have a lot of people that we can rely on. We don't have a lot of resources. But we have some very powerful and helpful collaborators in our efforts. The local groundwater district, Texas Tech University at Junction, AgriLife, Texas State Soil and Water Conservation Board, Texas Parks and Wildlife, the Master Naturalist, and our local Prescribed Burn Association, for example. We all work together and try to promote each other's activities, learn from each other, and work together. Education. Having an informed populace, especially in these rural communities, is very important. And so consequently, we work to prepare some of those reports that Andy mentioned, that I kind of identify what are some of the issues on the South Llano River and the James River. We've held workshops with the local community to identify what they see as issues that we need to start addressing. We've also had workshops with the Texas AgriLife Watershed Steward Program, a riparian workshop with the Nueces River Authority, and had numerous other presentations related to, say, brush management techniques, prescribed burning, and wildlife habitat along riparian corridors. Community participation. This is the toughest one. As I said, we're a small rural community, and 50% of the land ownership in Kimball County is absentee landowners. So we really have a difficult time, and we really have to work to get the message out, but we're getting there. Some of the things that we're doing is evaluating whether creating a paddling trail through Texas Parks and Wildlife on the South Llano watershed would be a good idea. Some of the issues that we've identified early on in talking to the locals, problems with trespass, heavy usage on the river, and littering. So this may be a chance for us to address some of that, those problems. The other thing, now back to the Guadalupe bass that I spoke of, the state fish of Texas. The Texas Parks and Wildlife has started a Guadalupe bass initiative. Originally, when we did some of the research, we were told that the South Llano River had one of the few pure strains of Guadalupe bass in the state. The problem is they hybridize with an introduced exotic smallmouth bass. And so now we're finding that there has been some hybridization, and we're working to restore those strains of pure Guadalupe bass. We're also looking at working with landowners to improve the habitat along the rivers. Also as part of this, the group is embarking on working with the local community to prepare a watershed conservation plan where we identify and coordinate voluntary, non-regulatory strategies and activities that address some of these issues we've identified, not only with the bass, but some of the other issues we've identified through our workshops and research. For example, if you go to the South Llano, you notice all these pecan trees along the riparian zone, along the river. Well, if you look, there aren't any new pecans coming up. They're all older trees. Overbrowsing from grazing or mowing of those smaller trees is something we're trying to address and to inform folks on better management. Looking for financial incentives for land stewardship. It's very expensive to do good land stewardship, but it's a critical area in which we can do it. Understanding the groundwater surface water interaction. Those springs on the South Llano, we think we know where that water comes from. It primarily comes from back up under Edwards and Real County, which is a big, vast open area that is underlain by karst or cavernous limestone. Water falls up there, soaks in, and comes back out at the springs. But we don't know exactly how that all works. It's very difficult to understand, but we're trying to get some better understanding of that. Invasive plants. I remember the first canoe trip and saw an elephant ear. As soon as I got back to Junction, I called Diane and said, okay, what do we do here? And we've also are starting to see some of the other issues. I found a jello shot container up on the South Llano the other day. So, finally, also looking at efforts to minimize fragmentation impacts. The Hill Country is a great place to live. People come in, buy up larger ranches that were smaller, that are now smaller tracts. That's more driveways, more wells, more septic tanks. But we're not going to stop that. But there's ways to work with that system and work with the landowners to make the impacts of that less. And then we're also looking at efforts to support the groundwater conservation districts in maintaining and improving groundwater quality. So, you know, we're working at the watershed scale here, and it's a fun way to do it, because when you do that and look at the land stewardship and the water stewardship, you can start to understand some of the interconnections between all of this. And it is very interconnected. You know, what happens with a prescribed burn in that organization and what happens with somebody working with the Natural Resource Conservation Service on clearing ash juniper, those have impacts on what happens in the springs. And we try to coordinate all that and make people aware of how all of that's trying to work together. It's a big task, and we're taking baby steps and getting there. We do have a website where we try to maintain the current research that's going on, the past research that's going on, local events coming up, offer membership information. The website is called southlano.org. And as Tom said earlier, we're also working, we have a good watershed, and we're also working with trying to come up with possibly working with the Environmental Protection Agency through their Healthy Watersheds program. So it's a lot cheaper to maintain it than it is to clean it up. And so finally, as I said, all of this is connected. You tie this all back to, well, for the folks from San Antonio, how is what we're doing matter to San Antonio? Well, going back to that big, vast region of the recharge area that's under Rock Springs and Edwards and Real County up there on the plateau, well, that area not only recharges, is the recharge for the South Llano, but also the Guadalupe, the Frio, and the Nueces Rivers, all four great streams in the state of Texas. And from a water supply standpoint, about 30% or greater of the recharge to the Edwards Aquifer, the drinking water supply for San Antonio, comes down the Nueces and the Frio Rivers. So what we're doing up here is also helping further downstream. And with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyson. Pay attention to that word watersheds. In Texas, all of our watersheds, which are where the first raindrops fall, are on private land. Texas is almost entirely owned by private citizens. Most of the pollution in our rivers and streams today is from non-point sources. Those are things like agricultural fields, parking lots, and highways. So what happens on private property has everything to do with the quality of our rivers and streams. The single greatest issue that we face in our terrestrial environment in Texas, which directly affects the aquatic environment, is that families are leaving the landscape in Texas faster than in any other state. The biggest issue we're facing in our watersheds is the continued fragmentation of family lands. One of the most beautiful rivers we have, of course, is the Medina. And Robert Brichetto, our next guest, is a sociologist who has a PhD from the University of Texas. He owns Social Research Services in Lake Hills, Texas, and he founded the Medina River Cleanup in Bandera County a decade ago. He works with the Texas River Protection Association, my colleagues at the Texas Stream Team at Texas State University, to help start cleanups on all rivers in Texas. So please welcome Dr. Robert Brichetto.
Thank you, Andy. And I'm going to address the question of protecting Texas rivers one stream at a time. And I'd like to arrive at some principles for organizing that protection. And I'm hoping that by the end of it, you'll come up and ask how you can organize the protection of your river or your stream. And I've got some ideas for that. So let's see how successful we can be in spreading this organizing. I think we can all agree, though, that rivers are indeed good indicators of the health of our planet and of the health of us. We can look closely at our water to learn a lot about the quality of our lives. So I want to talk about protecting your river. I say your river because, of course, you know that in the state of Texas, the rivers belong to the people of Texas. And I'd like to do this by telling you a story of how we developed a river cleanup and monitoring program for Medina River in Bandera County, a very small watershed that we call the Upper Medina River Watershed. The case example that I would like to use, I think, will give you some idea that through citizen action, you can develop river protection for all 200,000 miles of Texas rivers and streams. Now, it was almost 40 years ago that my wife and I were looking around for recreation for our new family, and we went to San Marcos to make good an offer to purchase a 17-foot aluminum Grumman canoe from Tom and Paula Goines, who had just begun to start their Texas, that Pecan Grove camp there in San Marcos near Martindale. And with $150 and about 17 box tops from Uncle Ben's rice, we were able to get that canoe. And I got it today, and we use it every year in our river cleanup. And more than that, we use it to paddle a lot of other rivers. But two decades later, after we purchased that canoe in 1995, we moved out to Medina Lake in Bandera County, and we became involved in a local group that was concerned with preserving the level of the lake there. Since you live on the lake, you want to protect your water, right? And the water source was the Medina River. So the Medina River begins now, if you look at a map of Bandera County, in the northwest corner of Bandera County, in the canyons and the hills of northwest Bandera County, and it runs about 50 miles all the way across the county and pours into Medina Lake. Later on, past the dam, if you follow it after it leaves Bandera County through Medina County, it finally goes and joins in South Bear County the San Antonio River. And if you ask any paddler who has been on the river, they will tell you, and I must say, it's just they tell me, but it's through the meanderings that it makes through those beautiful cypress trees, they see that the Medina River is probably the most beautiful river in Texas, as long as we have water in it, right? So we needed to create a sense of responsibility among local citizens for protecting this most valuable, very precious, and ephemeral resource that we had in Bandera County. So I returned to the place where I had purchased my canoe more than 25 years earlier, where Tom and Paula Goines had been sponsoring an annual cleanup of the San Marcos River. And we used their cleanup of the San Marcos River, which was started probably about 30 years ago, to model our cleanup in the Medina River. And there... we found that in the Medina River anyway, the main source of trash was really floods. And we had flood events that were just enormous periodically, these 500-year or 100-year flood events that occurred, seemed like, every couple of decades. 1978, 2002. We even had one in 2010 in the upper part of the Medina River. And they've washed houses and mobile homes and sheds and cars and refrigerate everything in those houses down the river, deposited them on the river banks. And of course, that meant that we needed to get cooperation from the landowners along there to get access to that big trash and help remove it, and also to get their big equipment, their tractors and so forth, helping us remove the refrigerators and the horse trailers and everything that we had to pull out. And after the flood of 2002, for example, we really filled five of these large 16-foot bins of trash, including 3 tons of metal. We found that recycling metal and cans really can become a very good source of income. And last year, our recycling raised about $500 in cash. Last year marked then the 10th annual Medina River cleanup, and we had 250 people show up. It was more than half of them, we were proud to say, were local. And the rest were from 37 different towns throughout Texas, ranging all the way up to Dallas and down to Houston. And we finished off the day with, as we do every year, with a nice barbecue, a 3-meat barbecue, and a picking and singing at the end of it, requiring a lot of local participation in just getting all of the T-shirts and food and entertainment together for it. But as we became more deeply involved in this very fragile river water source during the past decade, we learned that there was really more to protecting this river than just picking trash out of its banks every year. The drought is a major concern for the people in Bandera County, especially for the Medina River with its small watershed, especially when you're trying to attract paddlers who want to know, do we have water this year at your cleanup to paddle our section? And there were issues of stream flow. So we began getting involved in riparian concerns involving the river environment, issues of water pollution. We began getting involved in river access issues for canoeists, safety issues. We realized that really river protection was something that required reliable monitoring on a regular basis and a little bit of money to make sure we could pay for whatever needed to be done. So we started the Medina River Protection Fund and in 2005. To ensure that the cleanup and the monitoring of the river was able to be carried on in perpetuity. As we were paddling this river, I can remember just a little over a year ago, we also noticed that there was a lot of green stuff growing under our canoes. You could reach down and pull up a bunch of stuff growing at the bottom of the river, and this is a sign that there's something going on. Well, we had just passed the city waste facility that dumps into the river after you right within 100 yards of the river, and we noticed that also, we noticed the smell was a little bit different. So we began to get concerned about issues that had to do with water quality, and we got into water testing. And that's when we got in touch with the Texas Rivers Institute, the Rivers Institute of at Texas State University in San Marcos. And we established one of their stream teams. And so now we've got 4 teams that go out every month and test 4 different points in the river to see what the water quality is, what the E. coli count is, and so forth, and report back to them. Hopefully we'll be able to engage in analysis together and locate some of the sources of these, the point sources of these water pollution that may be occurring. And some of our members are working closely now with the Nature Conservancy to offer seminars and to landowners who might want to protect their property and to restore the springs on their land. So these are all issues that we didn't anticipate getting involved in, but by necessity, if you really want to protect the life of that river, you've got to get into. So there are some basic principles then that I want to share with you that I think are important for organizing to protect the river. First principle, it's got to be local. Got to be local. I've always felt that as much as government has a responsibility protecting our waterways and the interests of the people, the actual implementation of river laws is going to fall to the folks who have a local stake in the river. So you got paddling groups and scouts and boys and girls clubs and juvenile probationers who all want to paddle the river. They want to make sure that the river is good for recreation. They want to see it flowing free of debris, free of dangerous barriers, free of barbed wire that they might run into. Work with them. Landowners. Landowners along the river are essential to work with if you want to do a river cleanup. They've got to give you access to the river many times. The river runs through downtown Bandera. Business owners are important because they know that the river is the source that attracts a lot of people into Bandera, so they're going to support you and help sponsor the river cleanup. Environmental groups concerned with water quality and quantity issues are going to work with you. All of those have a self-interest in the river and will want to help you protect the river. Second principle, work with the public and the private entities at all levels, but make it a community-wide effort. This is an opportunity to draw together segments of the community that never come together normally. For example, in Bandera County, the Medina Lake community is about 25-minute drive from the city of Bandera, but they're all connected by this river. And they get together once a year to clean up this river, and that's about the only time frequently they do get together. But it's a wonderful joining of these two communities in an activity that's important to both of them. The river is really not just a real but a symbolic connection between the two communities. You got the environmentalists, the Bonnenbergers, for example, with their naturalist nonprofit organization, Bear Springs Blossom, are here today, I notice. They pitch in with the business owners of Bandera County. Bringing environmentalists and business owners is a real feat together. I think that's important. Local governments have an interest in seeing their most valuable natural resource protected. They can provide the sponsorship, and we get about $500 from each of them to cover the cost of the cleanup. Local state nonprofit groups like the Medina Conservation Society, Local Economic Development Foundation in Bandera, Texas River Protection Association, all of these are willing to pitch in as sponsors. And so I encourage you to look where are the self-interests for the river in your area. We signed up also with American Rivers in their National River Cleanup and also the Texas State Environmental Quality Keep Texas Beautiful program for no reason but to get plastic bags that were good quality for our cleanup. Local volunteer fire departments are very useful. We have five of them in Bandera County, and usually they have emergency responding teams that can help protect your river, your paddlers, when the river's flowing very fast. Third principle, and the last one, use internet technology to get the word out. Certainly you can't ignore the local papers and the banners across the main street and the flyers to the local restaurants. the traditional ways of getting things out locally, promote the cleanup. But canoe groups throughout the state, and young people in particular, use the web to communicate through meetups and listservs and Twitter and Facebook. And these are very useful tools, we're finding. We set up a website, and we will help other groups set up websites, called MedinaRiver.net, www.MedinaRiver.net, think of fishing net. You can look at that as an example. We've now are working with organizing river cleanups now throughout Texas, and working with Tom Goines and Paula and the Texas River Protection Association to the guy who I bought my first canoe from 40 years ago is now president of the Texas River Protection Association, has been for years, and his muscular dystrophy has not dampened his spirit in protecting Texas rivers, and he's willing to work with me and others to help anyone who wants to start a cleanup in Texas with the tools that are needed and provide personal consultation at no charge. So there is an offer that you can't refuse. Go to the website. It's txrivers.org, and you will be able to click on a link that will give you, put you in touch with the resources. The resources are also right there on that website, a lot of them online, that you will need to help organize a river cleanup. Everything needed to plan a cleanup, including assistance, personal assistance, is there. So the Medina River example is just one. It's only 50 miles of river, and that leaves 199,950 other miles of river now that have to be cleaned up, and it's up to you to do it.
Thank you, Dr. Brichetto. Well, you have given me the inspiration for the last takeaway of the evening with respect to what each of you can do. He talked eloquently about his Grumman aluminum canoe. Ladies and gentlemen, our children today are largely growing up in urban areas. They spend 6 hours a day in front of one kind of electronic screen or another. They feel like as long as they turn on the tap that the water will always be there. The single most important thing that you can do, and each of us can do it, is take a child fishing. Take them in a canoe. Put them in a river. Have them understand that it is a source of fun, but it is also something that they must take responsibility for. So thank each of you for your remarks tonight, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen.